with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV Radio. We relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision radio show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Fission radio show. Thank you for joining us. Today it is June 20th, 2017, 8 o'clock in the morning here on the West Coast. I want to thank you for joining us. Thank you for sharing our radio station with your friends and family and talking to people about my show, The Age of Fission, and letting them know they can find us on YouTube as well as on our website. And if they want to hear our station live, they can hear us on TuneIn Radio also. So thanks for joining us. I'm so excited today. My guest today is the man who created the title to this show, Mr. Thomas Ackerman. Thank you for joining me, Tom.
Good morning, Lonnie. It's a pleasure to be with you. It's been too long. I think you found a lot of new friends. It's been a long time since I've talked to you.
Well, what's interesting about that you use that word friends.
Why?
Because, you know, how we are right now in our country, there's a lot of chitter chatter in the United States about America being a broken country. We go on social media. People say horrible things to each other. Where you do this, they're picking fights, right? Like, really? We need to, like, stop. Remember I talked about the circular firing squad earlier with Americans pointing the guns at each other? That's ridiculous, because we need to take aim at the people who are harming us, like the nuclear industry, who is lying to us every single day. I mean, this is genocidal. It's beyond comprehension. We have an emergency, an environmental emergency on our hand.
You know, I know exactly. I mean, what you're talking about is front and center as far as I'm concerned. This is why I really like talking with you, because you get it. I think there are very few people I talk to that truly get it, and we're very few. And yesterday when you called me and invited me on your show, or a few days ago, I said, what is the most radical position you could take as a human being alive at this time? You know, I asked you that question, and I mean, I have my own thoughts on this. And if you're going to have a conversation with me, I would be very excited about dealing with that idea. What is the most radical position as a human being at this time that we can take? And a lot of people, like you just brought up, the aggression, that sort of animosity, hostility, is actually not really a radical position. It's very conformist and old hat. It's like, it's the most, it's kind of like the default mechanism of very low vibrating individuals, as I find. And before we go there, if you want to have that conversation, is this morning on my national radio, CBC here in Canada, I just want to bring this up because it's amazing. They came out and admitted that one in two people is going to get a cancer. This is now public. This is the new norm in Canada, that to accept the fact that one in two people will get a cancer. And of course, the follow up to that was 90 some percent survive. We figured it out. But of course, their standard of survival is 5 years. And if you die one day after 5 years, right, you're still a survivor. So this, I thought this was just phenomenal this morning. I couldn't believe my ears that one in two people are going to get a cancer in their lifetime. New standard.
50%.
I think it's more. I actually think
it's going to be more. I mean, it's
already. It's, yeah.
Well, this is the thing. They don't count. They don't look. Look what happened when the people of St. Louis, because they were well-educated and knew how to conduct scientific studies to the letter that would, that the EPA could conform with. Do you know what I mean? Like, they did it in a way that when they handed their data to the EPA, the EPA couldn't say, oh, well, this isn't scientific. They knew how to do it. They knew how to meet their standards. Uh-huh. And when they did this, they have discovered that there are cancer rates. I mean, it's undeniable the harm that the nuclear industry has done to St. Louis residents. Undeniable. Now, they are cleaning it up, and they're hoping that their children can live there and have a beautiful life. That's their goal in St. Louis. Now that we know it's here, let's get rid of it.
Yeah. What do you think is actually, from your understanding about cleaning anything like this up, how do we have that technology of cleaning up something that is with a lifetime, half-life of thousands of years, you know?
Do you know how many abandoned mines, not uranium mines, but a large portion, at least 15,000 of those are uranium mines?
You just said it was a lot more.
500. Well, I went back and looked at it. It wasn't 500,000 uranium mines. It was 500,000 at least mines. It was 500,000 mines open. And they say, now this is them, at least 15,000 uranium mines. Now that's all that they're, see, this is the thing about mining. Every time you open up a mine, you open up uranium. If you go deep enough, you're going to hit some uranium that shouldn't be down there. You're going to hit radioactive elements that are going to be dug up. That's that filthy slosh that sloshes out when you have a uranium mine. Uh-huh. There was a whole town in Georgia, a whole river was killed because of Duke Energy's, because of their mining. They just like, they just put it out. They just allowed it to go.
The irony there is too, that you mentioned 15,000 of these awful toxic pits are located in native lands. Yes. And I came across some literature when I was studying the Hopi, who are polyandrous, which is quite interesting. I think they're still around. I think the Hopi still have a small contingent somewhere. But the enlightened leaders were telling their people not to go to these mounds. They ended up being uranium mounds. They got it, right? They said, stay away from these places that have this weird, peculiar aspect to them. And they warned people, the shamans warned people not to go near these mounds, which were uranium mounds. And it ends up that the industry, this criminal industry, put 15,000 mines into the natives, right into the native community, right? This is quite outrageous. And the shamans warned people, do not go there. Don't, you know, stay away from these mounds. I thought that was quite,
Tom, this is something that I've learned since I've been paying attention to this since 2012. It's only been 5 years for me. Is that really, they're not the only criminal industry. The whole technology, John Goffman warned about this in one of the books that I read, either Poison Power or Population Control Through Nuclear Pollution. He wrote that book as a warning because he said, this is what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. It damages your children. So you are going to control your population if you don't do this. So now what do we have now? So, I mean, any wonder we have massive die-offs of animals? In all of these mass extinction pages, any of these scientists, not a single peep about the harm that new. There is a total silence. I'm considered radical because I insist on injecting this into the environmental catastrophe, global climate change conversation.
Do you want to go down this rabbit hole? Do you want to go down this rabbit hole?
I don't know if it's a rabbit hole, but I think it is a serious, everyone has just been, the brainwashing is complete. The people who have been the victims of nuclear pollution feel guilty. They don't want to talk about it. It's like when people used to talk about the insane. It was like, oh, it was their fault.
But you just said that the technology in general has created such a dysfunctional state, not just in our environment, but I believe psychologically. And my thing isn't the facts, ma'am. I think Sergeant Friday actually never said that. I don't know why it stuck to Sergeant Friday, just the facts, ma'am. Though I was researching that and seeing if he actually said that. Apparently he didn't. I don't know why that came up. But anyway,
we'll have to watch some of his old shows. You find Dragnet. That's Dragnet, by the way.
That's Dragnet. I love that, in my, when I was young.
We're oldsters. There's a lot of young people who have no idea what we're talking about. You're aware of that, right?
It's called Dragnet with Sergeant Friday and Joe, his sidekick, Joe somebody or whoever it was. I must have come out of Gulliver Travels. Wasn't there a man Friday in Gulliver's Travels? What I wanted to mention and say to you is that, having the most radical position as a human being alive today is really of interest to me, because I'm a contrarian on every level and I don't accept things that are told to me. I used to accept things pretty normally like most people, but I really dislike to accept anything that I just even smells. It hasn't passed that smell test of contrarianism. I push it up against the wall and pummel it and regurgitate it 10 times before I want to believe anything. So your thought about that, it's not just the nuclear criminal syndicate, but it's an underlying platform of technology, the idea that we live in an advanced, affluent society functioning on what is understood to be science, which is connected to technology. Fundamentally, we're connected to science through the idea that we're advancing, like the idea of progress, I think, comes into it. So as long as we are tied into that feeling of progress, science, technology, they really can do anything they want. You follow my thought process here?
Yeah, because people are willing to be little lab rats and guinea pigs, which is essentially,
this is progress.
To me, I can't get over the day when I was sitting in class a few weeks ago, and we were going to talk about environmental solutions, and he's got this little clicker, right? I interviewed Dr. Kaufman on my show. You should listen to it if you have not heard the interview. It's Dr. Craig Kaufman.
Okay.
And he's a professor of environmental politics. He specializes in South American, like what happened to the environment and how it all happened. It was because of the United States. Let's just be clear. It has nothing to do with the natural progression or their inability to build democracies. The United States destroyed their democracies and imposed this neoliberal agenda for the new American century, for the Americas. They just went to South America.
Uh-huh.
So, but anyways, the day that I heard him say and put the little clicker on and said geoengineering, and I'm like, I sat there like, what?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
This is a solution, because they know that the atmosphere is collapsing super rapidly, by the way. And this is not going to be a small thing we're having ravaging fires in Portugal.
Right now.
People that have been there for centuries are being burned out of their homes.
Right.
It's a shock. This is not like, we're used to having fires. No, this would be like Portland burning down, or Salem, or some whole parts of a country are being burnt down.
Mm-hmm. Right. So your level, when we first talked before the show, there is a level of distress, though, in terms of how do we approach this, the situation that we're in. I mean, we're anyone that is still attached to the idea that it's all working out really well and you know, a country called the United States is dominating the planet with its weapons, that this is really quite a good idea. And we call anybody that doesn't like us terrorists. So this is kind of the functioning within a portion of the population that is could actually be very influential. I think people that listen to your program and the great programs on UCY, they're amazing presenters on this, that still adhere to the idea that, well, we're all going basically in the right direction. It's working out more or less really well. This needs to be, they need to get up to speed that it's not working. This is what I say. Our maybe immediate environment is working if you still have a job, but that's going to come to an end. And then things will start to really look difficult very quickly. So your thought to me was, there is a level of, okay, what are we doing here? We're talking, okay? Now, by the way, I think this is an exchange. It's not just talking. You're not just on your program talking all the time. You have an amazing number of people come in and exchange thoughts and ideas. That's not talking. That's like you're influencing me. I'm influencing you. My life will change in some form or other because I'm not just talking to you. I'm responding to you and vice versa. So I think this is a higher level of, interaction. And
This is the thing. The purpose for me of this radio show is to help us create a healthier culture, for us to hang together, for us to look at it and go, this is really urgent. I mean, I actually, the more I learn about it, the more sense of urgency. It's like a speeding train. I feel like we're headed for a brick wall, or like we're the Titanic heading for the iceberg. And we have time to turn the ship around, but everybody's partying and nobody's even looking. Everyone's believing the lies and we have time.
I agree. But, you know, I wouldn't call it the iceberg thing because that'll just put people back into a shell. Here's how I approach this, okay? I've made a few videos on this in my last videos, and I talk about, I mean, I'm a painter, I make paintings, and I'm starting to revise my whole approach to getting it out because I'm not getting any, I'm having shows, but it's not where I want them in a larger domain, like the museums, they're just ignoring me. But aside from that, my approach to this, Lonnie, is to understand something within myself where I become effective. Like for me to tell somebody we're going down big time, I've said to you, I believe everybody knows. They intuitively, there is an understanding that we're quite dysfunctional at this point in time, and we know this. So how do we counter that? And to counter this feeling in us isn't to be bludgeoned with how terrible it is, because we know that already, but is give some sort of a feeling. It's actually quite, the way I see it in art, it's quite seductive to be seduced into a way of seeing and feeling something that allows us to open up ourselves again. And here's the word I'd like to use today. It's vulnerability, to feel a sense of vulnerability. Because if you're seeing the meteor coming or the iceberg, you're going to go into a shell and try to protect yourself. So my feeling is to present something to a person where it's not dealing directly with a topic or a subject, but just create a feeling that is conducive to that sense of vulnerability. Like we think about children. The reason children are so incredible is because they haven't been introduced to this aggressive sort of pummeling, hurt, maim somebody feeling. They're still vulnerable. What do you, you know, when I talk to you and I have a feeling about you as a person that this is something that you've experienced, your own vulnerability, I'm probably on, you know, in some form or other every day. You talked about this in terms of feeling vulnerable around the Trump bunch now, who are rampaging through our China shop of vulnerability. I mean, these people.
Well,
are
not even the Trump people, even the Clinton people. Let's just don't talk about how the Clinton and Trump people are all interconnected. This is the weird part. Before the election, it was all about, you know, 5-6 years ago, Trump, Clinton, they were, you know, and then, somehow politically they became different. And Trump's the clean guy, even though he's taken pictures and was at, you know, Hillary Clinton invited them to his wedding. I mean, this whole thing. the way they have effectively used the Trump administration to drill a hole in the unity of the United States is undeniable.
But you mentioned on several of your programs, I remember that women are quite afraid, especially the LGBTQ community.
Yeah.
There is a fundamental fear, and the idea that you could be, just because you're of an orientation, you can be decimated. I mean, this is like
there is a real fear among Black people in our country about cops for a good reason. You don't call, even me, you know what? I would be hard pressed. My number one rule about police officers is stay away from them.
Uh-huh.
100%. Call the neighbors first if you can. Call them last.
That's a sad statement. That is a very sad statement, I have to tell you.
Because you never know what is going to happen with them.
You don't know who's going to show up. What, whether it's somebody that still has a heart beating in their chest or whether it's just somebody that's out there to exercise their power.
And you don't know if they're going to be honest about what they report. You know what I'm saying?
I like the word honest. Yeah. Honest.
Again, we're coming back to that word honesty.
And vulnerability. Vulnerability. I think people have lost their own personal feeling of being allowed to be vulnerable. It's like when I make a painting, the greatest, I have a lot of doubt about things, but once I've presented a painting, Picasso once said, when he looks at somebody's art, he doesn't want their questions, he wants their answers. And when you look at a painting that I let out of the studio, from my perspective, is there is no question. It's all the answer. I'm going to give you the answer. And that's after 45 years of making paintings. I can say this is an answer. And I would say anyone that criticizes or argues, I'll listen, I suppose. But they're in no position to argue with me about something that is so, like Picasso said, it's perfect. Like, you know Picasso's work? I don't know if you like it or not, but there is a very strong mark that he makes on the canvas. It's not equivocal. It's not like wonder. It's like, it's either there, love it or lump it kind of feeling. Have you experienced
yes.
that with Picasso,
yes.
that love it or lump it feeling? Like it's a drawing that is so powerful and strong, like the mark that he makes. And there are several artists. He was like, you know, I mean, he
so
was.
So you know what you're really after? It's kind of like me, Tom. We are really after about becoming policy entrepreneurs, because this is really the issue. The people that are running the policy and making public policy and how we're discussing it, it's not reasonable and excludes so much harm and so many people. I mean, you bring up the children. It's very interesting because children are the first people affected by nuclear contamination. And on top of that, you know what I think these two things go hand in hand. I'm sorry. I don't know how, but I really kind of like, I think that the geoengineering and the nuclear, I think it's all connected. They started it when they knew they were destroying the atmosphere. This is what the key. Remember I told you I thought somehow they were intuitively connected? The geoengineering program started, I learned this from Dane Wigington, around the time of the nuclear industry. It was a science. Now, why would they do that when they knew? Why would they start? Because that was about the time they started the nuclear. They knew they were harming the atmosphere.
Yeah.
They look how much they bombed us. In the, you know, the 50s and the 60s, 40s. I mean, that 10 years of new. We didn't have to have a World War III. We already had it. We've already done it. And Everybody was going, yay, wow, that's interesting.
But now you've brought up something else. You brought up policy. You brought up the idea that,
but it is policy because this is how this connects.
Yeah, but I'm thinking.
Children, do you know we have more slaves on our planet through human trafficking?
Of
than
course.
We ever had when we had the black slave trade and sending slaves from South America
it's
to
legal.
Europe. I mean,
it's
unconscionable. But
yeah.
This is a policy. It is a policy of ignoring murder, death, kill, of ignoring toxic, murderous industries and their disregard for human life. It is a policy to buy scientists and allow. We know scientists are paid for. We know they're. There, we know the IAEA subverts the World Health Organization, which is why we have the independent World Health Organization. because those are doctors who work there and said, screw you, we're sick of being oppressed by the International Atomic Energy Agency. This is unconscionable. It is a toxic industry.
Here's what happens to me. Like you mentioned this, okay, you bring up children and the slave labor in India and China and places that, and it, by the way, here in the West, in Canada, we actually have a minimum wage. I don't believe you have a minimum wage officially in the U.S. It's at the discretion of the employer, isn't it?
No, we have a low minimum wage. I think it's like $7.80 an hour.
My God. Okay. So here in Canada, I think it's over $13 now, but you know, we have a cheaper buck and all that. But what happens to me is I, somewhere inside of myself, when the word children comes up, and I'm very attached to that feeling, not just like, I just don't see a child like an image of a child. I feel like an inner world of a child, especially in terms of trying to make art and trying to make paintings. There is a level of, I suppose, for the lack of a better word, it's like an inner world of understanding what it means to be a child again, right? That feeling of vulnerability. And I go into a shell always when I hear this, you know, how brutal we have as a human race to allow this. But anyway, my thought, and I think we've touched on this before.
But Tom, Lonnie, that's exactly the policy. This is the point of it. This is policy to disregard harm, even to the most vulnerable, so that all of us are battered, the complicity, the silence of the system. And this is my thing. These are not just the system. These are individuals going to work in the nuclear industry. These are clients going to Micronesia who have families and children in the States, traveling to Micronesia and having sex with 10, 12, 13, 14-year-old kids and coming back home and not telling anybody and never talking about it.
But don't I be mean, German. In Germany, they prosecute.
Billions of dollars.
In Germany, they've really cut down on that with the Germans. They used to go to Thailand all the time. I know about this. And the Germans are now standing at the airports, and people are very afraid to go to Thailand and engage in this kind of activity. But my point to you, Lonnie, was that...
The point is not about being afraid, Tom. It's about being honest, a lack of integrity. It's because a person of honor and integrity does not go down there and do these things. And this is where the whole system is about.
But how do you evoke in a person that sense of integrity if they're just indulgent? I mean, people are indulgent, and I don't know.
It's not indulgent. It is that's a complete disregard for the other human being.
Well, they indulge themselves. Yeah.
No, it's like, okay, I want to go indulge myself and strangle a puppy. Is that okay? No.
I'm not saying it's okay. I'm saying people have accepted that feeling in themselves that just because they can do something, they do it. It's an indulgence. It's like, I want to do it, I'll do it. I don't care what anybody thinks. So if the law doesn't protect children, then of course people, you know, they'll rampage through that.
You know what? I really disagree with you that people will just automatically do that. I think we are living in a society that propagates that. I disagree with you completely on that. I don't think that's human nature,
isn't it? It ends up in the same. We end up in the same place.
Is the thing. How do we, like, I believe that we are the policy entrepreneurs. We need to inject the nuclear into. We need to have people twist their brains a little bit. Like, geoengineering is not a solution to climate change. Duh. And we do have massive pollution from nuclear contamination in all kinds of ways, from the coal industry, from the nuclear industry.
But in our conversation, I'm not an, you know, I suspect a lot of things that I can't prove, but I believe it. But in our conversation, what I find for myself to be of value is that we no longer are in their headlights, that we create a narrative, that we create a world around us that is not based on knee-jerk reactions to their policies. We have to create our position in the world. We have to, and that's not meaning like, well, sure, become a politician, run for office.
I agree with you completely.
I think you and I, the conversation that we're having creates a new narrative. It's not about just talking about the criminal bunch who've run the show for 6,000 years. It's not just like yesterday. They've been doing this a long time. So my idea, my feeling is if I can change my own life and deal with people on the level of us talking about our subject, and it'll include how to fix Fukushima, how to fix the dysfunction in our society, but it's our conversation. We're not in their headlights anymore. We're like doing our, we're creating our narrative. It's like a new way of seeing the world. Like, you know, Lonnie, I say the world is not what it appears to be. And I think you can take that to a lot of different levels in the sense of course, I'm sure you have this inner feeling inside you. Some people refer to it as a spirit, or, you know, the religious types have tried to hijack that from us too. But there is this inner world that I feel has been so ignored, and people continuously ignore because, like I say, they remove themselves with the terror, the horror, into a shell, and they won't accept that part in us. We all have this feeling of wonder, this joy. You call, well, you say happiness is, what's the line that you use?
Happiness is resistance.
Yeah, or like that. And where does happiness originate? It doesn't happen. It doesn't hang on a tree. It comes from inside of us in some way, right?
And the resistance is the oppressor, because all of us have an oppressor. There is, that's just the journey of life. There's always something that's pushing against you. That I think that, and we're up against some pretty big oppressors. You're right. They've been doing this for 6,000 years. This is kind of like their,
how did they get away with it? You see, this is why I say, how did they manage to be able to run the joint for 6,000 years without virtually no resistance? And that's because I see that individually people have gifts, and those gifts are never realized in their lifetime, which is a real shame, by the way. I see this all around me, that people do things they don't really want to do. They get paid for something, and then they say, okay, I'm going to do this till the end of my life, and then I retire and I play golf. And I don't get it, because there is so much more to being alive for however long, and the possibility of exploring something in myself that I'd never thought or realized. And oh, forbid this. Imagine if I could even be original within that, because I believe there is a lot of originality out there that's unrealized. So this inner world that is not being discovered by enough people have allowed the reptiles, these vultures, to go through our china shop and just destroy everything, because we've let them. And the way we can counter that is to start the conversation, like the conversation you and I have, people who are inside themselves as much they see the external world, to work on that inner world. Why would you, Lonnie Clark, stand on the street with a poster exposing yourself, no one else around you, getting catcalls or whatever, people going by? Where does that strength come from? Nobody outside gave that to you. You have that inside of you. Am I right?
It takes, yeah.
You say, put on your courage, feet, or whatever, right? Where does that?
The thing is that I learned about courage is, like, having courage doesn't mean you're not afraid. It just means you go do it anyways.
That's right.
Right? Like, if you know that you're supposed to do something, or that something that you want, or that you know will help your life. I mean, I'm sort of guided by that inner light in me. You know what I mean? Like, you know, if God tells me to do it, I make an effort to be immediate. Although the things that cause me the most anxiety is because I'm not immediately obedient. You know what I mean? I hesitate. I'm like, yeah, but how am I going to do that? And
What do you mean?
Well, like, when you get a calling, when you know what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
You just feel it in the center of your chest. It's like being is like a string. You have to go do it, right?
Just love. Yeah. It's like it creates a real warm, beautiful feeling. It's like, oh, yeah. And no matter, you know, yeah, like you say, there's fear involved quite often, because
right. Love is greater than fear. It creates you get the right word, Tom. It creates like a love string. It's like bing, and you have to do it. And it is stronger than the fear that you have about failing or about being wrong or whatever it is that causes you to hesitate.
You know what the most radical thought would be for me right now? What I'm thinking is that people would identify strength normally, like I started in the conversation, seeing someone who can bludgeon and be like tough and punch you in the face. I say it takes a lot more courage to explore that inner part of ourselves that is the opposite to that. It's the opposite to what we believe to be courage. The greatest courage is to actually feel this vulnerability on some level. Help somebody that is less fortunate than ourselves. Go out and find people and try to relate to them. And I say try because obviously I'm still really working on this because.
Using that word try. You know, I have that funny thing.
I know, but I have.
But you know what I say? This is the thing. It's about understanding that violence is easy. That's the easy road. It's easy to be violent and spew out and just like be a 2-year-old and throw stuff everywhere. I mean, that's the easy part.
Yeah.
But it takes a more mature individual and a more experienced person. People, this is why as you get older, you begin to calm down. I mean, to be honest, like, geez, Louise, I think I told you I ripped apart a radio with my bare hands one time. Not going to do that anymore.
Yeah, get expensive.
Well, it's pretty toxic now that I think about it. Like, good thing my kids weren't in the room. Like, they ran away. They're like, because that's pretty toxic to tear up a radio. But
I can see you're a firecracker. No, I can see that. I can see that. You know, I can imagine that happening. But you get this because you're experiencing it on some level every day. Because I believe you challenge yourself to find that inner world, the functioning of your inner world. You're not obviously you're telling people about the facts out there, what we're facing, but it comes out of an inner world. And I believe we'll never solve the external until we do the inner. Honestly, you know, you can bludgeon people till the cows come home with all the facts. It'll never make a difference until people shift away from that. I mean, we're part of an environment. We're not just spirits, we're bodies. Very importantly, we're bodies. But that inner world needs to get it needs to come to fruition somehow, Lonnie. And that's why I love the art side of things. And I'd change making paintings if I found a better tool or a vehicle towards this feeling or expression. If I was a plumber and I would be able to do it, I'd be a plumber. But I find this to be working really well for me in terms of making paintings, you know, and why do people pay? Tell me this, Lonnie. Why would a person who has a lot of money pay $500 million for a Vincent van Gogh painting? What the fuck is that about? What is that about? Why would somebody take huge amounts of money for a small little object, right?
You're talking to somebody at the bottom rung of the ladder. I can't understand 3/4 of, you know, I mean, I saw a photograph that said Melania Trump carried like a $12,000 bag. I'm like, wow, who would pay $12,000 for a bag? Like, that's ridiculous. Really? Like, okay. I mean, honestly, to me, that hurts my feelings. When I look at the programs they're cutting, they're talking about, and then the charity, like, we have to lean on charity. Really? If we're going to lean on charities in America and cut social services, I just find the whole thing, the aspiration to like get a lot of money. If you don't have a lot of money, you're not considered successful.
If you do have a lot of money, and this is like in the people, I'm talking real money, like the Rothschild kind of money. These people have collections and I'm sure they're investments and money. But my thought on why someone would pay $500 million for a small painting is because whether they know it or not, it reveals exactly what we're talking about, this vulnerability, something that gives us the edge in the sense of being ourselves in the best possible way. Now, they're not exercising it. You know, the banker types always fall back into the position of, well, we love money more than we love people, or we love the affluence more than we love, you know, having a functional society, whatever their reason is. I'm thinking that there is such a power in certain even objects. Like, what is it that attracts me to a Goya or a Van Gogh? And it transmits on some level this fundamental notion that the inner world controls the external world. They figured it out. They understood it. and they managed to put it in their language with through colors, through forms, through their, I think, you know, the Renaissance established what is called perspective. They had a, they had certain, I don't know, what is that, techniques, but I don't think it gets down to technique, that you can do it through a technique. You have to do it through some sort of intuitive inner light that comes out. And I think Vincent, especially in his Yellow Range of paintings, I find those just, you know, magnificent. And one last note on Vincent. I went to an exhibit of his portraits, and I was very disappointed because the reproductions in the catalog had not yellowed the way Vincent's paint had yellowed. So a lot of it I had to impose, like what that original yellow might have looked like when he first painted it. It had actually lost.
How old is the painting?
Well, Vincent painted these in 1889, the last series of paintings that he did. And his portraits, he painted a lot of self-portraits, and they were phenomenal from the point of view, not just in terms of the coloration, but if you look at Van Gogh's, you'll find that there is a peculiar line tracking going on. He creates a very symmetrical, but not like repetitive. It's kind of a weird feeling where he makes lots of little lines and dots that have a direction. So literally in his portraits, it felt like he was painting what was going on under the skin. It almost, his portraits look like they have no surface, like a skin, like normal.
I'm sorry, Tom, but it's 8 o'clock in the morning. You sound like an artist. I can't help it. Sorry. I mean, how this relates, like, really, I mean, to me, if you use Vincent as an example, he was a tortured individual most of his life.
Yeah,
so he never really quite found his light. But what he did do was leave paintings. This is the sad part. He never really enjoyed the benefit of his painting and feeling like an accomplished artist. So that's kind of a hint to people in our frustration. Like, sometimes the brightest lights aren't seen until long after they've passed the ship. You know what I mean? The ship is passed.
They never come to light, Lonnie. It's just people. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It does matter. This is the point about activism. It matters that we get engaged. And if it doesn't work, keep going, keep finding it. Because really, I am not kidding you. We do have a sense of urgency, especially now that we have Wasteum Rick. You know, like, he's like, throw that nuclear waste anywhere you want. Don't worry about the count. I mean, Trump said this yesterday. Now that we have less regulations, we're going to get a lot more business. Yeah. Like, hello? If you don't mind murdering the little people, sure. That's really what it's about. Because a lot of people are going to be affected who are completely separated from the elite.
And as an artist, as you mentioned, yeah, I'm shamelessly, I will admit, I am an artist. And I've gone through my own process over the last, especially in the last 10 years, that have been quite, for myself, revolutionary. I've talked about my own breakthrough in this, because this happens once you dedicate and commit yourself to an activity. Generally speaking, not always, but generally, you get very good at it on a level that is not related to any other standard than your own. So to like, a lot of people say, well, everybody's an artist. That is such a fallacy. That is so ridiculous. Why would anybody, you know, is everybody an electrician or an accountant? You have to work at something in order to be good at it. For some reason, they've already implanted this in, by the way, art schools in Canada are totally overrun. It's like they have no room in them. Everybody wants to be an artist. And they've told people, yeah, I don't know why, because you can't really... 99 out of 100 or 999.
Yeah, but people want to express themselves. That's why, because people are hungry. They're hungry to, like, you, as you said, people have been turned off. Like, they want to get turned back on. Their buttons, they want their brains to go. They want to find that inner peace.
Exactly.
People are being driven towards it. I mean, look.
They want, they're yearning. Yes, there is a yearning. And the people are being told, now, the idea everybody is an artist is quite, actually a subversive and undermining, because this is something, you know, if I tell you, yes, you can have that candy, but then I'll give you salt or something, you're going to be very disappointed. And a lot of that stuff, people think, oh, everybody's an artist. But then you get into it and you go, holy camole, this isn't easy. This is actually something that you have to work at in order to be whatever you, because, you know, ultimately there is no standard. In art, this is interesting. In all other professions, for some reason, there is always a standard. Like if you're doing your accounting, you're going to have to read your accounting books, right, Lonnie? You're going to have to, what do you do in order to get it right? You have to.
Oh, I have to go to continuing education.
You have to know code. You have to educate yourself.
Yeah,
but in art, for some reason, there is this notion that anybody can do it and there is no standard, right? And the curious thing is, ultimately, when you get to the point of your own originality, there is no standard. But in order to get there, the standard is quite a rigorous process of sticking with it. You know, it's like one of my teachers said about me that encouraged me. He said, this guy has a lot of stick-to-itness. And I didn't at the time know what he really meant. But, you know, 45 years later, thick and thin, I've stuck with it. And he was right. He saw that. And anyway, what were we talking about? How did I get into that?
I don't know, because you're an artist. You can't help but talk about art. I found that article that you talked about the cancer, the CDC.
Uh-huh.
CTV News reported, and I'll put this link in. It says cancer rates expected to soar 40% by 2030 in Canada.
Yeah.
From the most recent diagnosis was like prostate cancer, colorectal cancer, lung cancer, and breast cancer.
Uh-huh.
These major four cancers will account for more half, 51% of the newly diagnosed cancers.
Does it say in that one? It was on the CBC that this is CTV. That's another independent station.
Oh, no, it doesn't say that it's going to be 50%.
Okay, I'll try and find that radio link and put it on my or I'll send it to you. The radio.
And they talk about the aging population, but they don't show it. So that's interesting. But look, this is the thing. We know it's going to happen. And this is why people... I think it's really important for us to actively engage at a political level right now, because the politicians have the purse strings and they have the weapons. And we have to we purport to live in a democracy in both our countries, some type of democracy, you know? So I think it's the only thing, whether they ignore us or not, we still ought to engage. I mean, that's what I think. Even if they're going to choose to ignore us and do what they're going to do, we can still engage and do our own thing and do what we're going to do on top of it. You know, like we really don't have that much. Even if every community right now started getting community rights, that's a 2-year process. Usually it takes about 2 years just to assert those rights. So in the meantime, we've got a bunch of lunatics with their hands on stuff, you know, on the bomb. And I don't know. I mean, I'm shocked that people in this country think that Trump is actually working for the benefit, and they are believing that he is, you know, this is goes back to the sex ring, the child sex ring. There are people who believe that Trump is working to close down the sex rings, and that's why this guy got shot, because he had just put out a video for that he had put in it. Now, what they didn't talk about, these people that believe this, is that there were Democrats who didn't get shot, but they just shot the one person who put in the legislation to protect children. But there's it has a lot of other people who are behind it. It's not like people are saying, no, we're not going to do it because we have these big sex rings that we're going to cover up. I mean, do I believe there's a organized crime sex ring run by deep state? Yeah, I do.
Huge.
Yes. You can't deny it. It's obvious.
It's obvious. It's been proven,
Lonnie.
But
to say that Trump is going to fix it and he's not part of them.
Oh, they get rid of him so fast. He would not.
Well, he is part of them. It's unconscionable.
I agree. He's
super creepy. And for people to say, you know, oh, you're just, you know, listening. No, I listen to him. Look at what the guy, and his trouble with Russia is only because of his own irrational behavior. If he would have kept his trap shut a long time ago, nothing that has been going on with the FBI and the CIA investigating him would have happened.
To dismantle the infrastructure of this depravity, as I see it, would Obviously, if you have sort of like a Robespierre moment, a new boss, old boss, so this isn't going to work. And this has been on my mind quite a bit in terms of, you know, when I think about making a painting, I try to infuse something of this feeling that I have. How do we dismantle this fundamental notion that it's okay to be the way you are, even if it's depraved? And what I always come back to is, like, we've talked about this, or I've mentioned to you, that in order to create this change among, first of all, within myself, which will travel out. This is why I loved my teachers. They were inspirational to me. They had wisdom. I trusted them. I believed them. Even though they had their own personal problems, I got so much out of these people to dedicate myself to the work that I wanted to do. And I think this is how it works, Lonnie, that people come to this. You call it come to Jesus moment or something, where people will dismantle this system, like on a fundamental level. We don't have to go and say, oh, these people are so bad. We're just going to start living our lives like this Bitcoin thing, which I think is a ruse. But the idea of a Bitcoin is we take over the financial system and create our own world financially in some form, right? I think that is like an indicator of something is going on in people to create their own narrative and direction, that they're not going to follow the banks, right? They're not going to follow. You've heard about Bitcoin? Have you?
Oh, come yeah, up? I know a lot about Bitcoin. Yeah.
They're like totally out. Appears. I'm not sure, Lonnie. Maybe you can tell me this. But it appears it's totally outside of the system in the sense that it is manipulatable, or it's manipulated or controlled. It has an algorithm that is fixed, that people have to mine Bitcoin. There are so many, I think 22 million.
Well, this is the thing with Bitcoin. It's a peculiar currency because you buy your Bitcoin and you get a key to log in, and it creates what's called a blockchain. And a blockchain is like basically a general ledger with everybody who's on it. And it's you can see how many people are in it. You can see everything that takes all the transactions. And only the people with the key to get into Bitcoin. But if you lose your Bitcoin key, there's no replacing it. You're super screwed.
How do you lose a Bitcoin key?
Because people, they tell you to write it down. They send it to you in a digital form. But, you know, things happen and you lose your, if you don't write it down, you're super screwed.
Oh, I see. Like my password on all my sites, I don't remember, and I have to get a new one all the time.
Right. So it's a very interesting whole thing. I mean, there's Bitcoin being accepted here. And the whole idea is that it's kind of like that idea about Ubuntu, right? We don't really need money. When you really think about it, the money is just a paper. We know what there's not. We're just exchanging the money for services throughout our whole life. Like, can't we just do this? Why do we have to be paid? Why does it have to be?
Is there a middleman? Why is there a middleman handling our energy like that, right?
Right. Like, let's just go to work. Let's just create this stuff. But then it gets down to the economic value of where you're at in the chain of command. And the idea behind Ubuntu is that everybody's needs get met. Everybody in the community's needs get met.
Yeah.
But is that a possibility when you have the brute force of violence is much easier? Yeah, that's a great idea.
But do you see when I bring up Bitcoin that it's an alternative to being in their sphere of operation, that people have come out and said, we don't need those people to run our financial. We can handle that ourselves independently, right? Without manipulation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very dubious, by the way, about Bitcoin. I think it's going to go into a bubble and then like the tulip bubble in the
70s. Well, I mean, it's on the internet. Like, it's not real, and it's on the internet, which means it could disappear in a heartbeat. If the grid goes down, bye-bye. Who's to say it's going to come back up? I mean,
imagine. Yeah, right.
That's why people like gold. Let's just be clear.
I guess, yeah, it's like considered a hard asset. Like, it's something that but it's just an agreement anyway. It's like, is it feathers? You know, the dodo feather, the dodo was extinct because they hunted it for the feathers because it was an exchange mechanism. I mean, brutal. I mean, you extinct a bird because you're collecting its feathers. Or I think a tulip in the tulip mania, a black tulip was worth like a whole year's earning.
Oh, really?
For like a doctor, somebody who was a high earner. One at the bubble of the tulip mania, a black tulip was worth an entire year's earnings of like a high earner. We're talking like $120,000 for one tulip, right?
So what we're talking about is a human inclination to want to attain wealth, really.
We're somehow protected, I suppose, and then somebody comes up with a clever plan like Bernie Madoff and all these pyramid schemes, and you know, you have to pay the new people with the old people money, and it kind of just escalates and it breaks down eventually. I think this is what somehow we're facing with this Bitcoin thing on some level, beside you pull the plug, electricity gone, and it's over with. But but I like the idea of Bitcoin, and it's as an alternative to being in their headlights all the time. It's like,
Let's be clear, Tom. Soon we're going to all, I mean, like the clock is ticking. This is not a joke. The planet is warming. We are entering into crisis phase. We're having animals die. The system cannot sustain itself. Any major earthquake or catastrophe is just going to jolt the whole entire thing. I mean, just like Fukushima jolted all of us, that's just the beginning of it. We unleashed a monster in Fukushima that has not...
Yes, I agree 100%. It is the main event. It is the main event.
It's the age of fission. It's like what cracked like what cracked the egg. You know what I mean? Like that's it. And we are the generation, our children and us, we're going to be here to face it. And so this is why I say, really, it's really important. Happiness is resistance. It's a process. We get to work on it every day because
happiness is your inner world. It's uh-huh. what I love about being a human being and having another human being standing there is that they have the same as I do, that inner world, that ability to transfer something that is so wonderful from inside to the external, and not this hostility and ugliness and fission products. And, you know, the external world is filled with all these toxins because we're toxic internally right now. We have to clean up our inner world to solve that outer world. That's what we have to do. And why would I believe, Lonnie, honestly, why would I believe a group of people that call themselves scientists who have invented the worst of the worst toxicity ever in the history of the cosmos, as far as we know, about anything? Why would I believe those people about anything?
Especially since they didn't even tell us about nuclear waste for 20 years. And when they started admitting it, they started lying about it and you know, tried to frame anybody who is in that industry who unequivocally goes against it, they do everything they can to destroy them. I mean, it had the silence. This is, again, I go back to this, Tom. I think it's like, I just feel it's very urgent that we have just got to face what we really have on hand here. And it's not just we have mystery diseases. This has got to end. They've got to stop calling them mystery diseases. It's ridiculous. It's nuclear contamination. They don't even test for plutonium. They don't test for strontium. They don't test for any of it. Maybe 137, maybe, because it's got a 2-year half-life. Well, why not test for plutonium? So let's see how much plutonium is in there. How many becquerels of plutonium is in it? We know we have a lot of it. Why not test for it?
And within the level of conversations I have with you,
Tom, we have 40 seconds, so okay. I just want
to what I would love to cover at some point is the origin of this personal dysfunction, how we can remedy this, how we can get out of this toxic.
Let's make that the topic of the next time you come on. I'll book you for two. How about 2 to 3 weeks from now? We'll get you back on.
You call me. I love coming on your show and talking to you, and I'd be thrilled to cover some of that stuff.
Well, thank you guys for listening to us. Thanks for Tom for joining us. Really appreciate it. As you can tell, please take action. Put your courage feet on. Do it afraid. It's okay. And we'll talk to you tomorrow. And thanks for sharing our show. It's really important that you help our station grow and our show grow. So thanks a lot. Take care, you guys.